You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole for all of those franchises outside Star Trek that we love, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single episode, the one and only super secret agent, Christy Morris.
Ooh, that's a good intro. Yeah, the president of the SOE.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, the SOE standing for
Secret Operations Executive.
Oh, I love it. Yes, that's you. We are very excited to be back, and we are going to be talking about the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. But before we dive in, just a quick reminder, as always, you know, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure you subscribe. Give us a star rating and review wherever you're listening so people can find the podcast. Of course, you can share us out on social media and follow us over at X Twitter, at the 602 Club. We're also on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can find us online at Trek.fm. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Trek.fm. There's also a listeners-only discussion group that you can join called the Babel Conference, as well as going over to Patreon, to patreon.com/TrekFM, and helping us make sure that every single thing that we are doing here on the network can keep coming to you each and every week. So, Christy, something that we were talking about here on the other side of the bar before we started recording was just kind of this idea of, you know, how we came to covering this movie in the first place. And so I was really interested, like, what was it that had drawn you to this movie and made you want to talk about it?
Well, I will say first and foremost, of course, it had to be the trailer and seeing Henry Cavill with a twirly mustache and making that face when he breaks into the room full of Nazi officers and is about to go crazy, where he sticks his tongue out. It's hilarious. And I went, okay, whatever this is, it looks fun. And it looks like it might be historically related. So I was in for that moment as well. But also, I've recently gotten more into World War II related films. So I did, for example, finally see the Dunkirk movie. And then when I saw this one was coming out and had some historical relevance, was interested in this as well. So both for Henry Cavill and also the relation, even if just more dramatized version, historically related.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you in that, you know, obviously Henry is a huge draw for me as well, being a fan. But like you, seeing that the trailer and the fact that this is based on actual historical events, I think one of the most fascinating things was to learn, especially even just coming into the movie, is that this was not a story that was known to anyone until it was declassified in 2016. Mm-hmm. So this is not a story that many people have known for a long time. You know, we've only known for a few years about this story for the public. And so to me, that was also exciting. And, you know, I love a good World War II film. And I also enjoy many of Guy Ritchie's films that he's done. You know, we both really enjoyed The Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, he did, of course, like Sherlock Holmes. He's done a bunch of other films that I've enjoyed as well. And so to me, all of those things were things that made me actually want to see this. And so coming into it, I was very much looking forward to it, as was my wife. And so definitely had a good time going to the theater to see it in Dolby Cinema. You know, you mentioned the idea. This is really based on a true story of something that had actually happened. And the whole kind of crux of the movie is that it is 1941, but this is before Pearl Harbor. U.S. at this point has been trying to send aid to Britain, but the German U-boats are pretty much making that impossible. Of course, Britain at this point is also being bombed to oblivion in London, it seems, and everywhere ships turn that are trying to get to England, there seemed to be a German U-boat sinking them. And then England finds out, Churchill finds out, that the Germans are actually using a Spanish-occupied island called Fernando Po as a supply depot for their German U-boats and the supplies for those German U-boats to keep them running. And this is actually against the conventions of warfare because at this point, Spain is a neutral party. They're not a part of the war. And so to use that neutral nation as a base of operations is not allowed. And so Churchill takes it upon himself to task MI6 with a black ops mission to stop this illegal supply line.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, I mean, that's the basis for this whole thing. And of course, the prime minister here, Churchill, is doing this, and he realizes that if everything goes south, he'll be kicked out as prime minister because he'll be breaking international law. And so one of the most fascinating things about this to me, Christy, was this movie really does bring to mind a big question, which is when to break the rules. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed watching the characters kind of struggle with some of these questions, especially Churchill, who he's doing this against the advice of all of his military officers. And yet he believes this and knows this in his heart, really, to be the right thing. And that it created, obviously an interesting moral conundrum for him, but you know, I love that we're kind of dealing with that in this movie.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is the big crux of the whole thing, because if Churchill, at least in the movie, we'll talk about for right now, we'll talk about what events were actually true or not in reality later. But for the movie, Churchill is in this situation where he had to decide, do we continue with what we think is appropriate and what usually would be considered part of conventional warfare if we're all following the rules? Do we surrender to a maniac like the rest of my cabinet is telling me we should? Or do we do secret option C and go against everything mm-hmm. that we right. would normally do and try something completely out of the box and what someone could consider crazy? And he ends up deciding to go for option C.
Yeah.
And makes the wise decision to keep it secret, because obviously he would be immediately removed as prime minister if everyone found out. And I mean, possibly not be able to have the mission at all.
The interesting thing here is that you really do come up with the question of, you know, just because something is against the law may not necessarily make it wrong, just the same as just because something is the law wouldn't necessarily make something right.
Right.
And, you know, that's really the problem that Churchill has here. You know, he realizes, too, Germany is not above at all breaking the rules, and in doing so is about to destroy Britain. I mean, you know, if the German U-boats aren't stopped and supplies are not able to come from somewhere to get to Britain, you know, Britain is not a self-sustaining island.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it comes to food and all of those things, supplies for the war, it just doesn't have what it needs to be able to do that in and of itself. And so I love this, too, because the choice really is coming down to, it's like survival or death,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Churchill is very much aware of that. And so therefore, of course, because he's the leader of Britain, chooses what he believes is the best option. And I think on top of that, you know, we have this other side of the argument that's being made by his military advisors who want him to surrender to Hitler. And he realizes there's no surrendering to this madman. This is not a person that one could surrender to and be okay. Mm-hmm. That if we did surrender to him, that, you know, life on this planet may absolutely never be the same. And it was really interesting because it also kind of showed that you have to necessarily, I mean, Churchill is doing what is right. He's also doing it, and it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that I really kind of loved about this movie, which is it reinforces this idea of, you know, doing the right thing is not usually the easy thing to do. And in fact, usually it's the hardest thing to do. And a lot of times we have to choose to do the right thing in spite of what everybody else around us is telling us to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I loved the scene, especially where he's clearly struggling within himself of how to handle all of the people in front of him telling him what he should do versus knowing mm-hmm. what the likely future is if he does what they say.
Right.
And I love that he realizes exactly what you're saying, where it's going to be incredibly hard and it may not even be successful, but it's sort of that saying of, if you don't take a stand for something, you'll fall for anything. He realized he had to take a stand for this, because if there was ever a moment to say to yourself, what do I stand for? He realized that was his moment of, I'm not going to give my people up to this person. If there's anything I can do about it, even though it goes against everything that's allowed, the other side is already doing the things that are not allowed. So if we surrender, for example, that's still just following the rules of warfare.
Right. Mm-hmm.
To someone who doesn't follow the rules already. So what are they going to do to you if you surrender?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly salient point. I mean, the problem that you come up with, and I think the most dangerous thing you come up with, is knowing that, okay, Hitler obviously is willing to break the rules. Mm-hmm. If we surrender to a guy who is willing to break the rules, how's that going to help?
Right.
You know?
What else is at stake?
Especially since, exactly. What I would say, you know, especially since when you think of what we, and it's hard too to put yourself in the mindset, because, you know, at this point, you know, Churchill doesn't have all of the knowledge that we have of all of the evils that are being done. But I think that he has some awareness of who Hitler is as a person. You know, he sized him up morally and intellectually. And I think, you know, what he sees here is a man who can't be trusted. And I really, you know, I love this idea of him doing this. And again, in the face of everybody else telling him, no, this is not the right thing to do. I just think this is such a great part of this movie, this whole discussion. And I think it's really important because it's just as timely now, I think, as it was then. And, you know, I think we are all faced with these types of questions of doing the right thing in spite of what everybody else is saying around us, you know, and in spite of what the prevailing culture is telling us to do. I mean, the entire military complex of Great Britain is telling him to surrender and is actively acting against Churchill and the rest of this film, you know? And so I really appreciate this, because it's sad to say that we're in a place where that theme would still be so relevant as, you know, it was mm-hmm. then.
And, you know, interesting too that he makes the decision, which isn't immediately obvious, I think, but to realize that it's not going to be as simple as having your existing enlisted people act this out. That the people needed to accomplish this mission also need to be people that already don't follow the rules. And kind of giving them some freedom to choose who they want mm-hmm. to have on their team.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a great point. In the end, you know, to have an unconventional mission, you need unconventional mm-hmm. people. And, you know, people who, and it's not just that don't follow the rules, but also are just kind of think outside the box. You know, they're not thinking in the military mindset. They're not thinking within the framework of what's already been done. They're people who do, they just mm-hmm. do. And, you know, I think that's obviously something that this whole movie is very much about, which is, like you mentioned, these characters who are just willing to do whatever it takes to complete the mission. And in that way, too, you know, they all want to live through this, but they're also not willing to not complete the mission when, if needed, their death would complete the mission.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's another incredibly important point, you know, about this as well. And so,
well, I love that they also included a scene specifically to say when they were thinking about calling off the mission altogether, because suddenly they found out that the ship's hull was reinforced and wouldn't be able to blow up, that one of the officers that's in on the mission says to Churchill, "You chose people that don't follow orders for a reason. What do you think that they're supposed to do when you give them this order? They'll figure it out. They specifically don't follow orders anyway, so why would they follow this one?"
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Something that was pretty interesting about the film and just the story, right, is that they know that they're going to have this three-pronged mission, right? They need to rescue Jeffrey Appleyard from a Nazi-controlled island in the Canaries, because they need him to help plan this mission and make it a success. And it's a stipulation of the main leader who's being recruited by MI6, Gus Marx Phillips, that this happen. That to sail to Fernando Po, where Marjorie and Heron, who are two members of the team, are going to be working on the island to create this diversion with the Germans that are there, the Italians that are there, and others, so that they will be able to blow up this boat that is supplying all of the German U-boats with bringing in the supplies, taking out supplies, and this Italian ship, the Duquesa. And then they show up and they sink the boat, therefore destroying the Nazis' ability to supply the German U-boats for quite a while. And then, of course, as one would expect, nothing goes according to plan. Mm-hmm. And I think the beauty of this, to me, was, like you were talking about, you know, you put these unconventional people in these situations and then watching them think on the fly. And I found that to be really interesting to kind of watch it. You know, we watch spy movies where people do this all the time. I mean, it's the whole point of most of everything you see in the Mission Impossible series. And yet here, you know, this movie strives, I think, pretty dedicatedly to not just overhyping the entire thing to outlandish, you know, places. Mm-hmm. I think they try to stick pretty close to the true history of this. And watching all of these people have to figure out what to do at a moment's notice, I thought was really great. And, you know, the parts of the plan that kind of go the right way, and then the parts of the plan where they just have to make it as they go along, I thought it was incredibly fun to watch.
Yeah, it was fun because of the quippiness that they add to some of the dialogue, and also, you know, outlandish things that they add in the action. But also just seeing how to handle a situation when everything suddenly changes and there are no orders. You just have to decide on an individual basis what to do next, I think is fascinating. So I think that, for one, I just wanted to call out the scene where they are trying to infiltrate the Duquesa, and Alan Richson's character that plays the Swedish Anders decides that he's run out of arrows and he's got to find another weapon, and he picks up an axe. You suddenly are faced with, oh, wow, okay, well, we're doing this. and then is waving with it through the window. It was pretty funny. But also just the quick decisions that they have to make. You can see even in the way that the actors portray each scene in their expressions. It doesn't even take dialogue sometimes. I think back to the whole suitcase scene on the train. It was so much nonverbal communication or reading into what Henry and Marjorie were talking about when they were saying, well, if the war goes this way, then we'll be eating this all the time. But if it goes this way, then we'll be eating Spanish food all the time. You know, it was kind of a funny, vague way of discussing the war in the presence of mixed company.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's of course that, and I think, you know, it does come down as well to, you know, the end of the film where you're left with everything that they thought that they were going to do once they got to Fernando Po comes to naught because, like you said earlier, the ship, the Duquesa, has been reinforced, its hull, and therefore the explosives that they brought to be able to penetrate the hull and sink it in the bay aren't going to work. And so therefore they have to come up with a completely different plan. And then of course they also have to involve more people in the plan. And you know, on top of that, you know, we didn't even mention, but that the ship was going to leave earlier. And so they had to find a way to sail there as fast as possible, almost get stopped by German U-boats possibly, and even the British, you know. So there just seems to be, as does with real life, one thing after another that, you know, these people can't seem to just, the plan, we can't stick with the plan because everybody else is messing up the plan. And I've heard some people talk about this movie and say that they felt like everything felt just a little bit too easy for everyone. And, you know, I think, you know, because this movie is based off of history, and we wouldn't be telling this story if it wasn't successful. You know, I think that I have no problem with them being able to accomplish basically all of their missions without losing a lot of life, or adding things in to make it quote unquote more exciting and everything, because I do find this to be exciting as it's told, and closer of course I think probably to what actually kind of went down. And the when we think, and the only reason I think we say that is just we're so used to, you know, big spy movies where everything is so outlandish, right? And again, I think the beauty of this is that you come into it, you know that they're probably going to be able to make it, or else we wouldn't be telling this story. But at the same time, I still found myself on the edge of my seat in a couple places where it's like, okay, I don't know how we're going to get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't wait to see how we do.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you brought that up too, because we just have to acknowledge as well, for people that have any knowledge of how a spy would actually operate in real life, it's not glamorous. Probably 90% of the time, it's pretty boring. You know, I mean, the whole purpose of being a spy is that you are getting intel and you're being as stealthy as possible. It's not about coming in and doing a bang 'em up thing. It's not always going to be like entrapment where you're, you know, going over and under the lasers. And it's not going to be like this movie where everything happens in a short period of time, goes, you know, the way that you would like to sometimes, or has a lot of casualties. The goal would be to have as little casualties as possible and be successful with your mission.
Right.
So it's not going to be perfect. And everything is not going to be super exciting. But also it needs to be said that for a movie to be watchable for most audiences, for something like this, there has to be some dramatization with the death count to make people interested.
Sure.
So they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they added, I think, a couple of characters that, you know, you're able to do that with. And, you know, I would say probably the only thing you could probably do in this movie, in my estimation, to maybe make it even better, would be to spend a little bit more time with the crew.
Yeah.
You know, and because I think it would help us to feel just a little bit more comfortable with, you know, when we do lose somebody. And so, but otherwise, you know, I think the way that this movie is set up and the story that we're telling, you know, it's not an overly long movie either, so they're definitely getting to the point of the story, and I think they're doing it in a way that makes it incredibly fun, and I really enjoyed. And so, you know, the cast of this movie obviously was a big draw for both you and I. Mm-hmm. You know, we both really like Henry Cavill, and him playing our lead here is Gus March Phillips, who is a real person and actually said to be one of the people that was one of the main inspirations for Ian Fleming's James Bond. Ian Fleming himself actually took part in this whole operation because he was working for the Secret Intelligence, or he was working for the SAS at this point. And so this, I mean, he's so much fun in this movie, and I feel like he's just relishing every moment that he gets to be on screen and kind of be this slightly unhinged and yet incredibly competent leader that people love enough to want to follow, which, you know, That's a tough thing, I think, to pull off in some ways, but he does a great job in this film.
Yeah, I love that even from the get-go, they have his character displaying these nonverbal cues of, I do what I want, where, you know, he comes in the room, and while they're talking to him, they say, pour yourself a cup of tea, and he pours himself a cup of whiskey. And they say, you know, we're going to move on to something else, and he goes, while I'm at it, I'm going to grab a cigar, maybe four for later. Yes. You know, I'm also going to so steal great. Your lighter and then sit down and use it. I mean, everything about him says, I do what I want. You have no control over me. So tell me what you want and I'll do it. He was great. And I think also I loved the addition at the end of them actually explaining who each actor was playing. Showing a real photo of the actual person and talking about their accomplishments for doing all of the things they did as part of this mission was really cool. And I learned something. I don't know about you, but I did not realize that Ian Fleming was part of this effort in real life and that this character was his inspiration for Bond, because it was still classified information, so he couldn't use real situations or real people's names, but he could write a novel about it.
It's one of the, it's one of those things where, you know, I think that this movie shows that Henry Cavill, and we've said this a few times, I think, throughout the years on this show, it could absolutely be the next James Bond, and in some ways kind of deserves to be the next James mm-hmm. Bond. He's just so good in this type of role. He can be incredibly charming, but at the same time, he can also be somebody who just comes off as incredibly deadly. And so, yeah, I just love it. And I think he was phenomenal. And I think the other part that made him so great in this movie was Alan Richardson and him seem to be having just an incredibly good time together in this movie. Like, they just seem to be having an absolute hoot on screen together. And the way that they play the characters, who are meant to be friends here, seems to be coming off perfectly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love their chemistry together. And I mean, I love Alan Richardson in general. I mean, he, you know, he's been great in the Reacher show on Amazon Prime. I think he's fantastic in that. And so, oh my goodness. I mean, those two together really make this so much fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I wish they had had a little more to do together, or, you know, just some more background character development on them, maybe a flashback or something. But I do think that the brief intro you get to each of them, and then seeing how they play that first scene together on mm-hmm. the boat as drunkards, and then later when they're caught by the British Navy, and Henry Cavill's character says, "Well, you can't blame a girl for trying."
Yes.
Was hilarious, and you can tell that the two of them play well off of each other, which surprised mm-hmm. me, since they're both leading men. That doesn't always gel well mm-hmm. together.
It's true. Yeah.
So, yeah, they were great.
Well, and, you know, I think that having them together with Isa Gonzalez, and then his last name is very difficult to say, but it's Babs Usokomen, I think you might say it. But either way, you know, I also appreciated them. And I actually kind of wished in some ways that that group of four had gotten to be on screen more together. Yeah. Just because even the bit that they were all great. But the way that Isa and Babs' characters of Marjorie and Mr. Heron play off of one another were fantastic. I really enjoyed those two working together, especially since so much of what they have to do in Fernando Po is together. And a lot of what you were talking about earlier was this idea of the kind of the nonverbal cues that you have to get with the characters, you know, and they do that, I think, incredibly well in this movie, where they're having to be on the same page with each other. But they're not necessarily, and for most of the time, they're not really getting a chance to talk to one another mm-hmm. about it, about things. And so I thought that they were great.
Yeah, they had to show each other that they trusted one another to do what they mm-hmm. had agreed to, and to do it to the best of their ability, but also to be able to communicate with a look or, you know, with a gesture. And know exactly what the other person meant was so vital. I can't imagine being actually in that situation in real life, because I will address,
yeah,
I looked at several articles, I don't know about you, about comparing which events were real versus the movie version. But the suitcase scene was real. The
That's
team
awesome.
Working for Churchill did actually create a suitcase that had a communication, you know, device inside of it, and was able to swap it out and get information.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that was really cool. And, you know, came up with a lot of the gadgets we would later see mentioned in the Bond series. Not exactly mm-hmm. the same yep. ones, but yep.
very similar, yeah. though.
So yep. I thought that was super cool. yeah, I think the two of them did so well. I wish that the scene where they showed off Marjorie's gun skills had actually had more involvement later in the movie. Because I felt like they showed her off and then she was going to get to do something with it and she didn't. So,
well, I liked, I mean, in that sense, what I really loved about that part of the film, though, with her was that she proved herself to be somebody that these men could respect and look up to. And that I think one of the things it does is it lets you know in some ways that she can take care of herself. And so when you get to the end there, you know, and she, you know, shoots the guy, the German in the head, it's just such a delicious scene. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, they set it up so that you should have seen it coming that she was going to be able to take care of herself no matter what position she found herself mm-hmm. in. And, you know, and yet I think she does such a good job of playing as well that she's never always certain exactly how she's going to get out of a situation. You know, I mean, when they bring her back to that tent and they're about to chain her up, and I you know, legitimately do think that she is thinking to herself, okay, I don't know necessarily how I'm getting out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I, again, that's one of those places where I just think she does a really good job with that. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the cast all here is great. Carrie Elway's playing M is fantastic. The only thing I think, again, I mentioned, you could have had the movie be maybe possibly just a little bit longer so we got more time to get a chance to know some of the other guys there that are working on the boat with our two main characters. But otherwise, you know, I think it's great. And, you know, the movie does what it needs to do. And so, you know, the other really big part of this is all of the action that we get, of course, with, you know, being on the Canary Island and, you know, we're rescuing Jeffrey Appleyard. And then, of course, we have the stealing the Duquesa. Mm-hmm. We can't sink it, so we're going to have to steal it. And so I just, you know, a big part of this movie, I mean, like, I would say a good third of the film is devoted to that last action sequence that extended where all of these dominoes are having to fall into place. So how did you feel like they did with the action in this film, and did they pull it off?
I really enjoyed the action. I think that all of it felt, of course, a little bit dramatized about the body count specifically, but overall well executed. And I think adding in a couple of comedic elements as well. And then realizing afterward with reading in the background of this that a lot of the events, although dramatized, were things that really happened. You know, they really did cut off all the lights in the harbor and brightened the lanterns in the places where the parties were being held to distract from the stealing of the ship. They did not actually have many, or if any, Nazi officers or soldiers that were on board the ship when they were stealing it. So that part was added in for the movie's sake. But the stealing really did happen. They did have to blow up the anchor in order to be able to get the ship out, and did it under the cloak of night while the rest of the officers and soldiers were partying, which is so cool. I love that they're trying to stay as true to the real events as possible and just adding in a little touch here and there to make it more movie fun. And I think that it was really funny having the addition of, oh my gosh, what was his name? I can never remember their names. Anders with the bow and arrow. And then finding mm-hmm. out that yeah. was something that he actually did in real life, because that was something he was used to doing back home, and he was very accurate.
Well, and I love too, you know, it doesn't just seem like it's a thing that you do for kicks, right? As of like, this is going to be fun for the film. You know, the idea of using a bow and arrow, the beauty of a bow and arrow is that it's silent, right? You know, it doesn't make the noise, obviously, that even a silenced gun does. And so it comes in incredibly handy for them a few times. And so, you know, I think the beauty of this movie is that the action is really well done. I think it's really well choreographed. You know, the thing about Guy Ritchie is that he does this type of thing well. This movie doesn't necessarily have the over-the-top flourishes that a lot of his movies do. This is a lot more straightforward. But I think the way that he shoots all the action is really fun. I don't mean this is in derogatory terms in any way, but this is a bit like Inglourious Bastards Light in the sense that the action feels very similar to that, but there's less gore to it, of like blood everywhere and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's still relative, it's got some heavy action in that sense, but we're not going Quentin Tarantino all over the place with it. And I think they did a great job. And I really enjoyed every single action sequence. I thought it was incredibly fun. And I had so much fun just watching the characters kind of go through. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where nobody has a problem watching people kill Nazis in a World War II movie. And so that's the other thing that really works for a film like this. And so, yeah, I think they did a great job. And actually, it's a movie I was wishing I was going to get a chance to see again before we talked about it. And I just didn't because I didn't have time. Yeah. But I am looking forward to watching it again. And so,
and one thing I'll add too that was a surprise to me that I'm sure you probably liked as well was the difference that they added of Gus being in the moment trying to take over this ship and coming across a kid that you can tell is like barely 18 maybe, that was recruited into this war and clearly is very green and inexperienced and is just doing his job, doesn't seem to want to fight at all, is just holding his hands in the air like, I don't know what to do, please don't kill me. And Gus lets him go. I thought that was a powerful scene because he didn't have to let him go. Clearly it was still somebody that was on the enemy's side. But Gus made the decision in that moment of he doesn't know what he's part of. And he seems very innocent in that sense. And I'm not going to kill him just because.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. I also do love, too, and it's something that's always enjoyable. You know, when we kind of have a coda at the end of the film, you know, we get all of these people being arrested when they hand over the Duquesa, and they, you know, they sail out into international waters, they hand over the boat to the British Navy, and then of course the British Navy arrests them because this mission was unsanctioned, and then they're all put in prison, and Churchill comes and says, hey, you know, you've done your country a great service, and now you're working for me. And then we get the moment, like you mentioned, where you have what happens to these people afterwards, and that these people, some of them did continue, you know, working with Churchill on these secret missions and helping, you know, win the war. And to me, you know, that's the exciting part of this being a true story, is that, you know, these people and what they did made a difference, you know, because they were willing to do the right thing just completely unconventionally. And sometimes that's what's called for. And I love that we get the chance to see, kind of as you mentioned earlier, you know, who these people were in real life and, you know, what they did then moving forward.
And that they weren't clearly weren't part of it for any kind of glory or recognition. That, you know, the general exactly. public was unaware of this until 70 years later. Are any of them still alive? Probably not.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, they did what they did because they felt it was the right thing to do. And they cared enough about what they were fighting for to do it no matter what. And so I think that's a beautiful thing. And finding out that it was true made it even more important.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad that it was finally declassified and able to be made into this movie.
Yeah. One last thing that I had too was I, and I'm really sad to say this, you can't buy the soundtrack anywhere, but Christopher Benstead did the music for this. I really enjoyed it. It had kind of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. flavor to it, but it was just very enjoyable in the film. And while I was watching the movie, I kept thinking to myself, man, I can't wait to listen to the soundtrack. And then I was really sad to see that it's not been released even digitally. And so I thought that he did a fantastic job with it, and I'm really looking forward to, hopefully, them releasing this at some point, because, man, I would absolutely love to listen to this soundtrack. I thought that the music as written for the film, it fit the time period, but it just really fit the movie, and it fit just even just the feeling that you want in this movie, right? I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like this one was really memorable as a score. Had some cues that really jumped out at me. I think that almost some, I don't know if I would say like tribal sounding moments, you know, where there's like a ha in music, some like vocal cues that were added or something. It was really interesting, very well fitting for a war movie, and I think also had some themes that stood out more than a general score that, you know, is just okay. So I would love to listen to it as well, and I think that it's saying something for me to say that because, you know, I'm not usually the score person.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually really interested. I think, you know, we've pretty much had only praise for the movie for the most part. What do you end up rating The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare?
So I have to say, I agree with that, that there were only mostly good things to say about this. And it's, although it's compact, it has a lot contained in that 2-hour time span. I end up giving this a 4 out of 5, mustaches because it does have some fun moments in it, which I think you kind of need sometimes for the relief from the seriousness of the situation, but also, overall just really taught me a lot more about things that happened during World War II, in addition to what I already knew, but also even informed my fandom of Bond more, which is great. And I just, you know, had two minor criticisms of it. And that was, like I said, wanting more character background and more for Marjorie to do. But I love as well that the end, the inclusion of what the actual people looked like and accomplished as part of this effort in history. And I think that overall, everyone needs to see this to be more aware of your history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, I think this movie was great. I really enjoyed it. I've recommended it to everybody. I thought it was a lot of fun to watch. I had a blast with it. And, you know, it's the type of movie where from start to finish, I was enjoying. I was laughing, I was smiling, I was just having a great time. So, you know, to me, I highly encourage anybody to go check this out. It really was great. I give it 4 stars as well. I think it's just a great time. Like, I don't know why people wouldn't want to go see this. And so go check it out. But Christy, if people wanted to see what else you've got going on these days, where would they find you?
Yeah, well, and right before I say that, too, I just wanted to mention that I've brought us a couple of new listeners. So hopefully they're listening right now. My fantastic CrossFit coach, Andy, and his brother, Charles. So nice. If you guys are listening,
that's
thank
awesome.
You.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So always glad to add more people to the 602 Club family. And you can find me as well on at Instagram and Twitter at Bespin Bell. And of course, on Facebook under my name and in the Babel Conference. And then, of course, on my finished show I did with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
Yeah, you'll find me all over the social medias under the name Matt Rushing 02. And of course, outside the 602 Club, you'll find me on all sorts of shows. Literary Trek sometimes, The Orb, Warp 5, The Artificial Tango, and Saddle Up. You'll also find me on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One I have is also completed. It was with Drea Kaufman, called Owl Post, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. You also find me with Aggressive Negotiations. John Mills and I talk about Star Wars each and every week. But as always, thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear?